you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, yeah.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. My guest this evening is Mark Hackard. Mark is an independent foreign policy analyst. He studies the intersection of political culture, religion, and strategic issues, which he approaches from a traditionalist conservative perspective. Mark's online project is Soul of the East, a website dedicated to introducing the English-speaking world to valuable aspects of Russian political and religious thought. Mark, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Tim.
Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Of course.
And well, tonight I wanted to discuss this piece that you wrote. I guess you submitted it to 21st Century Wire, the U.S. establishment's Russian scapegoat. The U.S. establishment's Russian scapegoat veils the real enemy within. It's part of a series that 21st Century is running for a couple of weeks regarding so-called fake news.
And that's also available at espionagehistoryarchive.com.
Is that your website, or is that one you contribute to?
That's Espionage History Archive is my website, yes.
Okay, so you can get an Espionage History Archive?
Yes,
okay.
.com.
And also, yeah, it was there at 21st Century Wire. So, the U.S. establishment's Russian scapegoat veils the real enemy within. Well, first you start off talking about, of course, the election results and this running meme or report that somehow the Russians had hijacked or influenced the U.S. elections, presidential elections. So how do you want to take that on?
Well, it's still running, and we're seeing just how far the establishment, the elites, are willing to take it. At this point, you've already had Michael Flynn, the National Security Advisor, or former National Security Advisor. He's been removed, supposedly for speaking to the Russian ambassador in phone calls or in meetings where it wasn't reported properly to the vice president or something like that. But I think it's just a case of hysteria, and that's evidenced by, well, it's hysteria. Hysteria is the instrument, and it's being used to basically weaken Trump and essentially ensure that he can't carry out any kind of independent foreign policy, at the very least, and eventually take him down completely, and I'm sure the plan is to eventually impeach him, get rid of him that way. They'll do everything they can. But now, just today, or in the past 24 hours or so, you've had Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, who is being accused of having secret contacts with Russia, over conversations he had with the Russian ambassador twice, and it didn't concern the campaign apparently, but these kind of things are ridiculous, because as a senator he had contacts with many ambassadors from all sorts of countries. So it's kind of spiraling into absurdity, but it's all for the purpose of removing Trump as a viable independent player who could affect some change. And Trump is not perfect, certainly. And even in the case of you look at, for example, Middle East policy with respect to Iran, Flynn was very hardline on Iran, and that may have played a role in his removal. But at the same time, the very public reason given was that he had ties to Russia, and Russia is now the bogeyman, the enemy du jour. So it's a continuing buildup of it's sort of a new Red Scare, but this time it's the left that's promoting this idea that Russia is a threat to our democracy, or it's just absolute nonsense.
Yeah, it is particularly curious, the whole thing here, how somehow we're supposed to believe that we heard this accusation that Russia hacked the election, but there's no definition of what that actually means.
What does that actually mean? That just sounds absolutely cartoonish, that somehow a guy at a computer, you know the Hollywood stereotype, the hacker with the sunglasses on, maybe some music playing in the background, some techno, and he's kind of in a dark room, and he manages to he gets into the election and switches the vote the millions of votes from Hillary to Trump. It makes no sense at all. There's no central terminal for that. There's nothing of the sort. There's no evidence that's been presented that Russian hackers were targeting state electoral infrastructure. So it's really silly, and it's just been a meme put out there that if you say it enough times and you say it loud enough, that people will eventually believe it. And of course, those with the motivation to promote it and to invest in it will, if it's about them getting rid of Donald Trump. And again, Trump's not an angel, just like anyone, but he is a bull in a China shop, in the respect that he is not, from my point of view, I don't think he is carrying out the elite agenda necessarily. And he wasn't supposed to get in. Hillary was certainly the favored candidate of whether it be Wall Street or the military industrial complex, the banks, pharmaceutical industry, and so on and so on. Trump wasn't. If you look at the record of contributions, he wasn't the favorite of the great and good billionaires of the United States. So,
well, certainly the chattering class didn't support him, and nor did the
not at all. The media certainly did not, and the media are just instruments of influence on the public. I mean, the media are six corporations that own 90% of the information flow and monopolize it and feed the public total garbage. So
the six corporations that are interlocked.
Yes. So it's always about interlocking directorates. And right, they share the same agenda. That's obvious. And they're beholden ultimately to the financial elites who have been controlling the country for all these years.
And also, they don't admit to the fact that, like I think you mentioned in the article in the beginning about, you know, skewed coverage and loaded polls. And so they themselves were taken aback by the actual election results. Then they tried to pull the popular vote meme.
Right. And you know. And you wonder, were they lying to themselves the entire time, or were they purposely putting out false information and black propaganda? I think it was a bit of both. And they are that deluded. But they were also doing anything they could to undermine the Trump campaign, for sure. That was clear just from, if you look at media coverage, there's no other way to see it.
And the election itself, the coverage and also the various leaks that occurred in the run-up to the election, particularly in the final weeks regarding Hillary Clinton, her emails, and the subsequent revelations regarding the Clinton Foundation in Haiti and some of the things that have come out after that, it does suggest that there's sort of a civil war within the deep state, which used to not exist. Now it's openly talked about.
Another interesting thing. Yes, I think that's right. Yeah, and it could be that each of these factions has been using leaks and various methods of revelation of, you know, what were once secret documents or confidential emails and so on, in order to advance their position and pressure the other side. But I really do think if you look at the Russia hacked the election meme, or Russia supposedly influenced the election, there's been absolutely no evidence for that. But there's plenty of evidence of wrongdoing in the WikiLeaks emails about the Clinton Foundation, or about Podesta, or influence peddling, or any of these phenomena. There's lots and lots there, and that's where the prosecution should be. But again, if they use the media, if the elites in the Democratic Party and you know, these interested players use the media to scream about Russia hacking the election, it's a method of misdirection, you know, away from these very substantive issues and criminal behavior on the part of very powerful people.
And also, the idea of influence the elections, Russia influence the elections, what does that exactly mean? Because Russia Today or Russian journalist or, you know, they ask questions on their stations on Russia Today that you don't get in, you know, CNN or Fox or MSNBC or NBC or ABC or CBS. If they're giving coverage to certain issues because it supports the Russian agenda,
right?
In that process, it informs the American people on certain elements or dimensions to political issues that aren't being covered in the Western press, in the Western, you know, the controlled media of the West. Is that really, you know, sure, that influenced the elections, but isn't that a proper way to influence the elections?
Yeah, that's fair play.
Yeah,
there's no other sense in which you can, unless you want to say that the Western media have no right to speak out about Russia and criticize Russia all the time. That it's a two-way street. So unless both sides decide to get rid of each other's media operations within their countries and ban them from any kind of broadcasting or programming, then it's clearly just a case of sour grapes that one side is actually reaching some segment of the population that's aware that something's not right with their country and isn't interested in swallowing more pop culture and just really degrading propaganda.
Well, now, it used to be
Russia has its own propaganda organs, of course, and
yeah,
you know, propaganda isn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't have to be. Propaganda just means basically, you know, spreading information. It's not always bad or always good. So every side has their propaganda operation, and that in itself doesn't prove anything any other way. But if the U.S. is going to, or rather if factions within the CIA or the media are going to point the finger at Russia Today or Sputnik for simply writing news stories that line up with the facts, then they're essentially admitting to their own bankruptcy.
And it used to be a mark of, I guess, a sign of one's, I guess, sophistication or education or erudition, if they were aware of the foreign press and the coverage. You know, like you read the French press, or you read the British press, or you read accounts of going on what was going on around the world, because you knew you were getting an angle or perspective you might not be getting in the American press. And I do think that many Americans simply are not aware just how bad the information they're getting, how limited it is, and how you have to avail yourself of foreign media to get some balance or some, you know, other perspective to get a better idea of what's really going around, you know, what's happening in the world.
Absolutely.
And now it's like a sign of foreign influence. I mean, people with a degree of sophistication will discount the fact, you know, will consider the source. You always say consider the source. You know, and so it's
right.
Something, you know, whether it's press TV or Russia
right.
Today or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. If you read something on press TV, then obviously, yeah, you're looking at it from it's going to come from an Iranian perspective. Or if you read something from Russia Today or Sputnik, you know, it's going to come from a Russian perspective, or wherever you go, that's going to be the case. And to pretend that media in the United States are somehow objective and not biased and present sort of a God's eye view of how the world works, I mean, that's very very naive and would be a good indicator of one's gullibility if that's the way someone thinks.
Yeah, like I said, when the WikiLeaks things came out regarding Hillary Clinton and the server issue and the emails and the Clinton Foundation and the apparent, you know, I guess, fraudulent nature of that foundation, if the source of that was indeed Russian, I'd say the American people owe Mr. Putin and Russians a thank you, because no one's questioning the information itself.
Right.
Saying,
right.
The
information
source?
Is about it. Right. It's been verified. It's real. It's the genuine article. And the closest that any of these leakers or media personalities or CIA officials can get to accusing the Russians of somehow swaying the election is by saying that they released this information to WikiLeaks, that they hacked it and then released it. But that is not the case. If you look, you can see that Craig Murray, who's a former UK ambassador and has plenty of experience in the foreign policy world and in statecraft, has admitted to being a courier for WikiLeaks. And he has said, he stated specifically that the source was inside the Democratic Party. It was a disgruntled individual within the Democratic Party who felt that the situation with the Hillary campaign vis-a-vis Bernie and so on was not just, and therefore they shared the information. So that the entire Russian dimension right there just evaporates.
Yes. Now, in your piece, in addressing the issue of Russian influence, you actually start to talk about or write about what the Russians actually did during the Cold War, when they were the Soviet Union, and certain departments of, I guess, the KGB and Cheka, what their active measures actually consisted of, the disinformatia. I remember I read a book by that title talking about the Russians were very good at active measures and disinformation. But it was even in the height of the Cold War, it was their objectives were somewhat modest compared to, you know, the hyperbole we're hearing about, you know, hacking elections and infiltration. It was more like, what were they actually doing in the Cold War in terms of active measures?
In the Cold War, the KGB had a unit called Service A that was responsible for active measures. And active measures, that is a name given to activities directed at deception or disinformation, and frequently associated with the press. Not always, though. It concerns various spheres. So there are five basic areas for active measures to take place. There was political, and that would be related to Soviet policy vis-a-vis foreign countries and influencing policy within those countries in favor of Soviet interests. Economic, military, and scientific technical, and then counterintelligence. So each of those spheres had dedicated officers who were working to carry out disinformation operations against the enemies of the Soviet Union and advance Soviet interests by deceiving it could be a public audience, but it was often active measures were often not targeted, purely at, say, an entire country's population, but it could be a very specific audience. It could be one policymaker, or one person in charge of an industry. So it really just depended on the targeting and what interests were being prosecuted. But Service A was a very sophisticated outfit, and if I could give you examples of what they did. Now, the allegations with regard to hacking the election, whoever came up with these has some historical literacy, and it's been documented in books. You can read the Mitrokhin Archive, which was co-authored by Christopher Andrew, about KGB active measures, say, in France. And here's some political active measures. So in 1974, the KGB worked. They wanted Mitterrand in power rather than Giscard d'Estaing. And the left to right, the Soviet Union was favoring Mitterrand and all that. And they put out through friendly journalists information meant to discredit discredit d'Estaing, right? I'm trying to think, the KGB was also very much focused on compromising and discrediting opponents of the Soviet Union. So, for example, in Britain in the 1960s, this happened in 1965, there was a man named Commander Anthony Courtney, and he was a Tory MP, and he was very active in speaking out against the Soviet embassy, and he was calling for tightening the screws on Soviet embassy personnel and watching the KGB residency there. So the KGB had enough of his behavior, and they decided to turn the screws on him. And what happened was they released compromising information on Commander Courtney, where he was photographed in compromising sexual positions with a woman in a Moscow hotel when he had gone on a visit there. So they released that, and his career was over, and so was his family as well. His wife left him. So that kind of thing did go on in the Cold War, and so the notion of leaks and revelations and releasing damaging documents, that's all very much part of what a good intelligence service can do as far as active measures go.
But it was essentially the truth, right?
Yes, exactly. That was the truth. And yeah, in those cases, it was the truth. You know, it depended on the mission or the objective. And sometimes absolutely clean, real documents would be released that were accessed in various ways, including by agents. Or sometimes those documents would be altered, right? Or they could just make – or sometimes documents would be forged completely. It just depended.
Yeah.
But if you – you can read the book Spymaster by, oh gosh, Tenet Bagley. And he was friends with Sergei Kondrashov, who was a major general in the KGB and was head of Service A around the late 60s, 70s. Kondrashov said, he specifically emphasized that the greater the veracity, the better. So the level of disinformation should be ideally lowest. The truth is the most damaging factor that really creates havoc for the enemy.
The truth shall set you free, right?
Right. As far as propaganda is concerned, so when you're looking at you know, revelations and leaks and all these things, oftentimes people will try to say, oh no, that's fake or that's forged, because then you can just dismiss it. But when it's not forged or fake or altered, well, then you got a problem on your hands, because you have to deal with things that are really going on, and whether that's corruption or any other kind of misconduct or perhaps other really nasty policies that people in power might be carrying out.
Yeah, well, maintaining lies is much more expensive than just telling the truth.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why you have layers upon layers of deception. You have an entire infrastructure devoted to it.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, you have an entire industry, or, you know, you have psychological warfare. I mean, that the various intelligence agencies and military services, spent a lot of money studying and perfecting and refining in many ways. It's worldview, warfare, perception management.
Weltanschauungskrieg. It is worldview warfare, and it goes right to the point of distorting and degrading culture.
And it encompasses everything. I mean, everything. Yes. Commercials, music,
right?
The clothes we wear. The t-shirts you see if you go to the mall, what people wear and how they dress. it's amazing how these things all, you know, are directed, you know, largely directed, you know. Obviously, culture has its own momentum, but you push it a certain direction and you know where it's going to happen, you know, so.
Right, it's been studied scientifically. Right, you can apply those stimuli and a large portion of the population will respond the way you want them to.
I heard that when Putin was a colonel in the KGB, he wrote a white paper, and this could be the foundation for Russia today, where Russia really couldn't compete with the West with propaganda, and also just with one of the high-tech equipment they had regarding espionage and spying. But they said Soviet propaganda was just simply too crude, and everyone knew what the story was.
It was a big joke. Yeah,
at Pravda, TASS, and you know. But I heard he wrote a paper that proposed that from now on they just resort to telling the truth, and that will, because the West was so corrupt, it would be in their favor. More or less, it served their purposes just to tell the truth about the corruption in the West. And lo and behold, we get, you know, Russia Today now, which does, I mean, obviously it has its agenda. It's Russia. It's Russia State TV. But really, the media in the West is also corporate state TV, you know, so.
Right.
But what they do is they highlight if you turn on Russia Today, or even Press TV for that matter, they'll handle issues. They'll have guests on and talk about issues or address dimensions to issues that you never hear in the Western media. And they seem to be following that playbook. Is that true about Putin? Are you aware of that?
I do not know if that's true. I'm not sure. I would have to look into that further. It is interesting, though, and it does kind of... it is certainly reflective of the way that I think the Russians are thinking. There's a lot less... Now, everyone plays the game of disinformation and deception and forging documents and altering... various documents in order to sex them up, so to say, and embarrass one's opponent. Everyone plays that game. And just like espionage, that's not going away. But what you do notice is that as opposed to the Soviet era, the Russians are just covering things, and of course with their own point of view. That's pretty natural, but at the same time they're covering stories, they're pointing stuff out that doesn't get attention from Western media, and facts are very inconvenient for the establishment press and for the media who are very much controlled. And it's too bad people can't realize that, but we often talk about Operation Mockingbird, but people really should review that and go and look at congressional testimony about how this was in the 1970s from the Church Committee, where it was admitted by William Colby, then director of the CIA, that the United States government through the CIA employed various editors and high-level personnel in media organizations to either block stories they didn't want or promote stories they did want in the public space. And that was that number. They numbered in the hundreds of agents in key posts throughout print or television or the radio. So that it's not like that. It's not. I highly doubt that Operation Mockingbird. Of course, it's under a different name, but it didn't simply go away because the church hearings exposed them. It simply took on a new form.
Yes. Yes. You make a point in the article, which is important about regarding Russian intelligence activities in the United States. Great powers have intelligence agencies, and they engage in espionage and influence in other countries all the time. That's nothing new. The fact that the Russians are doing it. In fact, the Russians probably do it to a much lesser degree than, say, the Israelis, who not only probably run a very sophisticated blackmail intelligence operation, but they probably surpass the Russians in that regard.
In regard to covert action in the United States, definitely.
Yes, in
the
fact,
Israelis
so,
are the yeah. most aggressive, and that you can talk to people in intelligence and counterintelligence about that. That the
if you talk about foreign control of, if you talk about foreign control of U.S. policy, do you think the Russians or Israelis exert more influence on U.S. foreign policy?
Certainly, the Israelis. Yeah,
it's the Jewish ownership of the media, which is a big part of that, because Hollywood. I mean, you have Hollywood moguls getting medals from Israel
Certainly, the slant, there's a definite slant towards Israel, and that can't be denied. There's no other. You look at all those. I mean, media segments about the Israeli-Palestinian problem. You can compare Western media or American media to foreign segments. And it's not that all the foreign segments are wrong or that they're anti-Semitic or anything like that. It's just they're recognizing a reality to some extent that Palestinians are under military occupation by a hostile power. And, that's not to say all Israelis are bad or or, you know, in the case of the American media, that often to paint Arabs in an awful light or whatever. It's not to show chauvinism towards any people, but rather it's just pointing out a fact, an injustice that should be answered.
And if you are a congressman or congresswoman or a public official, and you cross Israel, you will feel the wrath of AIPAC.
Oh,
very
yes,
quickly.
Yes, I mean, yeah. Cynthia McKinney is a classic example of that. And yeah, if there's what was the gentleman's name, Rosen, who bragged, was he an AIPAC lobbyist, but he had connections in the Pentagon or something.
Was that with Larry Franklin and over there at the Office of Special Plans? And
yes, I believe so. And yes, and they these AIPAC lobbyists bragged how they could get 10 senators' signatures on a napkin within an hour or some ridiculous proposal. It was basically, you know, we could get these guys to do anything, and because they're really, yeah, they are on the hook, certainly. And to think that it's because every senator just loves Israel so much. Well, that's not the case. They're certainly, the Mossad is very effective in running blackmail operations and compromise type programs, and in addition to covert action, that's what makes it all fit together.
Yeah, I don't think we should just disregard the fact that Monica Lewinsky was Jewish.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to remember what there was supposedly a source in the White House, a Mossad source, codenamed Mega, but that may have been. I'm not sure if it was a human source or if it was electronic intelligence or something like that. But yeah, that whole scandal does have a Mossad dimension. I believe that Benjamin Netanyahu, what did he presented Bill Clinton with information about his sexual dalliances were being monitored, and that his political opponents were trying to tear him down, but he assured Bill Clinton that no, don't worry, this won't get out. You know, that's like
J. Edgar Hoover's tactic.
Yes, yes.
And the, yeah, the, so, you know, this, you have what, LBJ, was it Matilda Krim, who was the Israeli intelligence asset, that he was one of the women he was fooling around with was Matilda Krim during the Six Day War.
And this, oh, interesting. Goes, I didn't know about that. Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons, you know, the intrigues behind the USS Liberty attempted sinking by Israelis, and why Americans didn't hear about it at the time and still are largely unaware of it. And that's, again, is a reflection of Israeli, you know, Zionist influence within the U.S. government. You know, and of course, the longstanding influence of the British in overall American culture, but media and news, and that's a whole other foreign influence, which is, you know, far exceed anything the Russians ever did. Talk about, you know, both world wars, right? That was Russian.
Oh, yeah.
Russian, I mean, British active measures.
Yeah. You know, yeah, you know. That was key to getting America into the war both times. And they
exert a lot of influence in Hollywood, right? I mean, just like the Israelis and the Jews do now in Hollywood. But back then, it was the Quarter Circle, and, you know, to make all the movies very pro-British, and there was very much
an Anglophile element to Hollywood back then. Yes, it got pushed in various films, and I'm trying to remember who were the big Anglophile actors. I think. Cary Grant may have been.
Oh, well, Cary Grant, you know, Gunga Din.
Yeah.
I was watching an old Shirley Temple movie. This was made in 1941. And it's about, I guess, during the Crimean War, I guess. And she's meeting Queen Victoria. And Queen Victoria is this great lady. But this is these movies that you don't think they have any geopolitical significance, but they do. This is all part of the programming.
Yeah, it's too, you know, Shirley Temple wouldn't be asking Queen Victoria about running opium into China.
Yeah, people still starving in exerting influence, you know, violating U.S. sovereignty, having the audacity to try to influence a foreign election. You point in the article the long history of the CIA and the United States, or CIA, or the NGOs, CIA fronts like USA Aid, or democracy. You know the what's that called? Democracy. What's that?
National Endowment.
Yeah, National Endowment for Democracy, which is the CIA
International
front.
Republican Institute.
Yeah, you detail in an article just kind of the long list, I guess the list of crimes that the CIA has committed since the end of World War II in hijacking and fomenting civil wars, engaging in coups, hijacking elections, getting in bed with mobsters and drug dealers to. Make sure that they control elections in Italy and in France. And so what you're seeing here is, I guess psychologists would call this projection, I guess, on Russia.
I think that's the term that should be used. Yeah. it's amazing because the record is without parallel in history. As far as covert action and regime change, I guess you could say that the British rule really was the, what kind of foreshadowed the CIA's activity worldwide, going back to, say, the 18th and 19th centuries with their various their roles in various revolutions and upheaval, and, you know, whether that was the French Revolution or in the 20th century, the Russian Revolution, and certainly that includes the role of financial oligarchs. But the CIA really does have a record of overthrowing governments and creating instability and sowing chaos wherever it goes for the entirety of its existence ever since for 70 years now, since 1947. Right out of the gate, they were influencing the elections in Italy and France, and that was done in an alliance with people like the Sicilian and the Corsican mafias.
Mm-hmm.
Again, funded by the proceeds of narcotic sales, specifically heroin. So none of this really makes much sense. As far as Russia being the big threat to American sovereignty and democracy and so on, when you realize that this is literally the CIA's program is overthrowing governments one after the other, year after year. And, you talk about Italy and France, or you can go to Iran, 1953, Guatemala, 54. Congo and the murder of Patrice Lumumba, it goes on and on and on. And today you have events like Ukraine in February 2014. The government was overthrown and they used a coalition of liberals and neo-fascists to take power. And that's so Kiev is still under CIA control. As far as who really runs the show there, and then you also have the entire Arab Spring, or the overthrow of Gaddafi, which was a monstrous crime, or the destabilization of Syria, inserting jihadists into there. 300,000 people have been killed. That's been a CIA operation. So for the CIA to come out and say that Russia is overthrowing American democracy or hacking the election or any of this nonsense is quite an irony.
Yeah, it's almost as ironic as the fake news meme that they tried to accuse alternative media of.
Yeah, yeah. Since they are literally in the business of fake news, and have been producing it for decades, and you could look at figures like Frank Wisner, who ran the mighty Wurlitzer of journalists and media outlets to basically play to the CIA's tune, or Cord Meyer, who was another CIA officer who was deeply invested in altering culture and socio-political movements and with cultural roots.
Didn't he hire Gloria Steinem?
That was Cord Meyer. Yes, yeah. Yes. I mean, the CIA, of course, yeah, backed Gloria Steinem and Ms. Magazine and promoted feminism at the same time that they were working with neo-fascist movements, say, in Latin America, or, overthrowing Allende in Chile. They know how to play the dialectical game.
And in that process, I think that buying up newspapers in Chile, using newspapers to undermine Allende. This is, again,
That only makes sense. You want a full spectrum dominant strategy. Yeah. You want to control the media space.
More fake news, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and they all think they also were behind the promotion of Playboy.
Yeah, that
doesn't surprise me. Gloria Steinem used to be a Playboy bunny.
That's right. That's right.
But that, yeah, all part of that culture control degradation,
And you see that dialectic that the puritanical aspects of modern feminism and then the degradation of pornography are really just two sides of the same coin.
It's dialectics, because the whole Playboy image
is brought to you by the same masters. Yeah,
to create the cad, the man who the womanizer becomes cool, and the reaction to that is feminism. And so you create two dysfunctional polar opposites.
Yes, and then the result is disintegration of the family.
Yeah, destruction of the whole corruption of sexuality, which sexuality is so easily weaponized because it's so, it's such a base fundamental force, the life force, and it has to be, in the interest of civilization, it has to be channeled in a very constructive way. If not, it can become very destructive.
Right. When you pervert it, it's like taking a flamethrower to culture.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they've always, the cultural Marxist targeted sexuality. People like Herbert Marcuse and Wilhelm Reich. And also even before Hitler, you had that Lukács in Hungary doing it. You've had to make, the authoritarian personality, which is published by the American Jewish Committee, was a declaration more of ethnic warfare on the Christian majority, the American people, because it said that strong Christian families or strong families with strong father figures were the source of fascism. In order to get rid of fascism, you had to destroy the family, and to do that, you have to weaken, destroy the idea of the father, and so all this cultural degradation, disintegration we're seeing is a function of that strategy being played out. But the curious point about that is, a lot of people say, well, this was because of the experience under Hitler. The only problem is they were doing it before Hitler.
Right. Well, cultural Marxism and the Frankfurt School were certainly active before Hitler. And, the basic premise is that any normal traditional culture or civilization, just if you just go down a checklist of traits, they're all fascist. You could take any group in history, and almost all of them would be considered fascist by those criteria.
And of course, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, it's literally a program of disintegration.
And here's where it gets really confusing if you still adhere to the left-right paradigm, is that the cultural Marxists were brought in by the OSS and CIA.
Yeah. Yeah, because that is part of the oligarchy program,
yeah,
to change the culture.
Mm-hmm. And the promotion of communism or fascism, for that matter, yeah. Again, you get that polarity, right? You get that polarity.
Yes, yes, it's all situational. So on the one side, you will see that various NGOs and especially during, we'll see how things go with the new administration, but certainly during the Obama years, you had groups like FEMIN being supported in Russia, these sort of exhibitionist women who would go out and do crazy things and as a mark of their liberation. Whereas at the same time, the United States is a very close ally of Saudi Arabia, which executes women for very minor offenses, or what can be in their culture are considered offenses.
Mm.
Or they fund Ukrainian neo-fascists who espouse a supremacist ideology and want to kill all Russians or want them ethnically cleansed or from the supposed greater Ukraine that they've imagined. And they're also supported covertly. So it really doesn't matter what they espouse per se. It's whether they're useful.
One point you brought earlier, point I think we talked about how that's the Soviet disinformation branch, Service A. Did you say? I'm sorry, was it Service
yes.
A? How they would try to spread disinformation to get the West to spend money on a lot of stupid weapons programs.
Yes, yes, that went both ways. That was something that both the CIA and KGB enjoyed.
Okay, I was going to make that very point.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, that's like Team B, right? Going in.
Right, right.
I was like, well, yeah, because that's, if you look at it from the bankster perspective, right, that's the kind of like, at the end, of the people at the at the top of the pyramid love that, because that's just more money feeding into this huge weapons industrial right. complex. That
Yeah, it's fine. It's all a big scam anyway.
When you look at the acres and acres of rusted Soviet tanks that were never used, or the acres and acres of rusted planes out in the desert in America,
yeah,
it's not a waste if you're the people who made the money selling those things. You see, that's just a sort of like evidence of the embezzlement, that's the fraud that's occurred in the past 60-70 years. It's a huge wealth transfer scheme, you know.
Yeah, you bet, and it just shows the power of fear and propaganda, and certainly there were clashes of interest in the Cold War but really, when you get down to it, neither the United States nor Russia should be each other's enemies. There's no vital interest that clash, and if you look at the history of U.S.-Russian relations, you see that America and Russia were originally friends. Is even though these two countries are very different, they really don't have any major points of conflict. Rather, they can get along and trade with each other, or just enjoy basic cultural interchange and so on, and that's normal. But if you plan to rule the world and you want to create a global system, a world state, then Russia is a major impediment to that, and they stand in the way of you dominating Eurasia, and so that's why they have to be the enemy to these elites who run the show in foreign policy. It shouldn't be that way, and I do have some hope that may change for the better, but Trump and anyone on his team who might think in that fashion, they have a lot of challenges ahead of them. So we'll just have to see.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have to see. Now, one thing is, the of course, the whole, we were talking about the fake news stuff, and I think you alluded to it earlier, is the history of it here in the West. I mean, the accusation of fake news is probably the new conspiracy theory, the accusation that originated with the CIA in 1967. Ironically, that idea itself was a product of a conspiracy theory, of a conspiracy within the CIA to create that meme.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you go through the longest history here in the West of fake news, the sinking of the Maine, William Randolph Hearst supposedly saying, Pictures I Finished the War, the Pulitzer Prize, the sought-after award for mainstream journalists, that Joseph Pulitzer was a yellow journalist, a kingpin, right, of yellow journalism, exploiting the news. Senator Oscar Calloway in 1917 exposed the fact that J.P. Morgan had purchased the nation's 25 leading newspapers to control the news, produce fake news. Both world wars, freedom of the press was virtually suspended, and news was heavily censored to maintain wartime morale. It's propaganda. World War One had the Creel Committee that I think they hired Lippmann and Edward Bernays. In World War II, you had the Office of War Information and also OSS. These were psychological warfare agencies that were designed for not only to target the enemy, but primarily to target the home front for perception management in the name of wartime morale. Of course, the Vietnam War, we have the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Throughout the Cold War, you mentioned Operation Mockingbird, of course, and you mentioned Frank Rich's Mighty Wurlitzer, which is sort of a broad plan to control media, everything, entertainment, everything. It was, so that he could play the country like a Wurlitzer organ. More recently, we had CNN faking Scud missile attacks.
CNN is hilarious. Yeah, they have the best fake news segments. I gotta say, there's one that listeners should look up. It's supposedly in the Black Sea, around 2014 during the crisis over Crimea. Where a CNN reporter is supposedly on a U.S. Navy ship in the Black Sea. I don't know if you've seen that one, but
I have.
Right, he's striving mightily to keep his balance on this ship as the choppy waters are beneath him, and it's clearly on a green screen. I mean, it's something that a 10-year-old kid could point out.
Remember on 9/11 when they ran the archive feed of Palestinians celebrating?
Yes, Palestinians handing out candy to celebrate the dead Americans. Well, talk about just blatant lies. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that you don't accidentally run an archive feed, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
that's right. No, CNN is clearly joined at the hip with the CIA.
And Operation, of course, you have the revelations of Amber Lyon when CNN was more or less was accepting payments from foreign governments to do favorable news reports. But in this case, it was Bahrain, I think, where she was doing
because they were suppressing the Shia majority there, mm-hmm. and CNN was running puff pieces on Bahrain.
Yeah, and the news source itself. I mean, they'll run stories, not to mention pharmaceutical stories about vaccines and. Health reports to promote the whole pharmaceutical industry. So it's bought and paid for. That's all that's fake news. I think we can throw in Hollywood and CIA and the Pentagon, influence in the Pentagon. There's several books about that. Jay Dyer talks about this a lot. Of Hollywood within the CIA.
Great job on.
It's ubiquitous here in the West. I mean, it's just absurd that we're busy pointing fingers at foreign governments and the fact that they might seek to influence an election. And I would say if you do fancy yourself a global empire, leader of the world, and you're there to manage the world, to maintain world stability, I think there is a certain legitimate claim that governments have that they do seek to influence you. If you're assuming that powerful role in the world. If you're an empire, you're going to have foreign influence. I think the founding fathers warned us about that, right? About tangled alliances.
Yeah, that was one of their pieces of better advice for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the situation now where Washington has become. It's not only a city that's crawling with spies per se, but it's it's full of influence operations, and everyone's trying to get a piece of the influence pie, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's only natural. I mean, it's
yeah.
It's, I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah, every country's going to pursue their own interests, and some do it more aggressively than others. Some do it in a very underhanded manner. Everyone spies, pretty yeah. much, and that should be it's expected. But you're right. The entire notion of being a global empire means that the metropole is then hived with all sorts of rent seekers and unsavory parties who will sell information and influence, and these are all levers for subversion.
And also another area of influence, or another area of controlled another area that's controlled that we think is the area of free thought would be academia. The Church Committee also back in the 70s studied the influence of the CIA in academia, not just with research dollars. And of course, we've heard about MKUltra and McGill University and, you know, what they did with various psychological and hospitals, even prisons. But the university itself, the CIA, the Church Committee exposed how much the CIA had infiltrated the universities with, you know, professors being paid, not just for research, but also to, control the interpretation of history and philosophy and foreign affairs and their studies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that of course, that would, the knowledge of that fact would compromise academia deeply. But mm-hmm. so we don't hear about those things.
Yeah. And I just finished a book by Christopher Simpson called The Science of Coercion. And he's talking about the whole research, pretty much all the money devoted to researching communication, mass communication, was done by, at first, the Pentagon during World War II. Or actually, that predates in the 30s with Hadley Cantrell and the Princeton Radio Project. And this involves Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds broadcast, the Halloween Eve. And that was a pretty much a study of mass psychology. It was intended.
Right. Right. But, it was a big experiment.
But pretty much all the research, there were a few dollars for advertisement. Pretty much that whole entire academic discipline was funded by the military and intelligence agencies, how we communicate, mass communication. So television, particularly the news like Sarnoff and William Paley, all came out of OSS and OWI of World War II. They're all intelligence assets. Or
exactly. All the media titans were tied to the OSS or to other propaganda organs during World War II. And so the war was essentially carried over on it, as far as propaganda goes, onto the American people. It's not like mm-hmm. it's not like the methods of operation were changed that much.
It wasn't just overt propaganda, like we have to fight the communist, the atheist Russians. And it was very subtle. That's one thing that the British are very good at, and I guess the Americans picked up from the subtlety of the propaganda, because it's also selling the idea of the good life. One empire, of course, Henry Luce and the Time Life Empire, linked right back to Skull and Bones. Of course, Skull and Bones creates the CIA. But the whole idea of Life magazine, Time magazine, Sports Illustrated, Fortune magazine, they're selling what it means to be an American with all those
magazines. Right, and they're the arbiters of morality and reality, really, and telling you how to live your life and what being a normal good American looks like, and so you're supposed to follow those cues.
That means having a big house and being in debt and consuming.
Right, and maybe during the 60s you do drugs and you get kind of messed up that way, and it alters your consciousness. But that's all, you know, that also was directed. Just, you know, the entire counterculture didn't suddenly spring out of nowhere and as an organic phenomenon.
It was the counterculture was foundation funded. So what does that tell you?
You bet. Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
I mean, come on, I mean,
it's not for your own good.
Yeah, the radicals were foundation funded. You know, oh, okay. As Lenin, was it Lenin who said the best way to control the opposition is to beat the opposition?
Yes, opposition. To be the opposition. Yeah,
and he himself was controlled opposition. So,
I think, yeah, at the end of the day, the Russian Revolution was in fact inspired and ultimately directed by banking elites in London and New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, is there anything else that we, in that article we covered? I think we did. We cover everything. Is there anything other? Anything else you want to bring up? Or
let's see. I think we about covered it. You can find it again either at 21st Century Wire or EspionageHistoryArchive.com. It's a pretty good breakdown of the history of KGB deception operations under Service A, and even further back to the 1920s, and how this tradition has existed all these years, and the Russians are quite adept at it. But at the same time, these operations were for concrete goals, and not for these fantastic objectives like supposedly single-handedly turning the course of an election. Now, that doesn't mean that the KGB wasn't active in active measures in elections, but there's been no evidence to suggest that Russian intelligence, the SVR or the FSB or the GRU, had anything to do with the outcome of the 2016 U.S. presidential elections. They've presented nothing. Everything's been spurious, and you know, traced to anonymous sources or a really sloppy report released by BuzzFeed. These things just don't cut it. And so, yeah, that's kind of my take. As far as my activity at Espionage History Archive, I'll be coming out soon with a piece on Victor Rothschild, who was close to the Cambridge Five. And I have the memoirs of the first head of the KGB, Ivan Serov. He was head of the KGB from 1954 to 58. And in his diaries, he says that Rothschild was, in fact, a Soviet intelligence asset during the 30s and 40s. So that kind of solves a mystery and a controversy that has been going on a long time as to whether Rothschild did work for Soviet intelligence. There have been some people who have claimed it. Others have hotly denied it. But this, in fact, is confirmed by the first chairman of the KGB. And that would suggest something more in line with my article about Philby, Kim Philby, that Philby was certainly an ideologically motivated traitor, but there were traitors above him within the British elite who were looking to transform Western culture and create really what amounts to a tyrannical world state of total control.
Yeah, Rothschild's motivations probably weren't Marxist-Leninism. It was just part of this.
I wouldn't imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tied in with the, of course, the Rothschild family was certainly a big supporter of the State of Israel, and Sirov notes that Rothschild essentially dropped contact with Soviet intelligence once the State of Israel was created, because he had a new platform for projecting power, you know, that dynasty did. Mm-hmm. So the Soviet Union's utility post World War II was kind of exhausted. But yeah, it should be an interesting. It's a translation, and then it'll have my analysis too. So.
Great, that'd be very interesting, because that whole thing with, you know, the Victor Rothschild, he was more or less the head of British intelligence during the Second World War, correct?
He was high up in MI5, yes.
Okay.
He was in British counterintelligence, but he wielded influence in British intelligence as well as in the energy sector or in strategic planning for a very long time after the war, and was privy to lots of secrets, and so if he was in fact an asset of Soviet intelligence or had been tied to them at one time, it would explain who tipped off Kim Philby when Philby was in Lebanon. He was spending his time in Lebanon after he had left Britain. He had to resign from MI6, and so he was working as an independent or a, you know, kind of a stringer in Lebanon. I think for the Observer and maybe the Independent, but Philby was and he was also working for MI6, but in reality, of course, he was still a KGB agent. But someone tipped him off, and they sent Anthony Blunt to tell Philby. Blunt was sent to Lebanon in 1963 and informed Philby of this. Now, as to who sent Blunt, that's kind of anyone's guess, but Rothschild was close with Blunt. They were both members of the Cambridge Apostles, and they were still in communication. So it was either Soviet intelligence or it was Rothschild who was also instrumental in Philby's unmasking, because the woman who reported him to British counterintelligence was Flora Solomon, who was mad that Philby was writing articles in the British press that were biased against Israel. And so she had known for a long time. He had tried to recruit her for Soviet intelligence several years prior. This may have been like in the late 30s or somewhere around there. He had tried to recruit her for Soviet intelligence. She declined, but she never told anyone. But it was only when he started during his journalistic career in Lebanon, when he started writing articles that were not favorable towards Israel, that she decided to report him. But she, of course, was close with Victor Rothschild as well. So,
Now, was it Anatoly Golitsyn who exposed Philby? Did the final?
I'm trying to remember who gave it. It may have been Golitsyn who gave additional confirmation. Yeah.
And he's the one that claimed that the Soviets were engaged in this false, you know, the false Sino-Soviet split, and all reforms in the Soviet Union were fake. It was designed to lull the West.
Right. It was a giant conspiracy.
Yeah.
And the entire Russo-Chinese alliance, or the Soviet-Chinese alliance, was fake, and they were just lulling the West to sleep, and it got so ridiculous as to the point where he was saying that the pitch battles that were going on the Monski Island in the Far East between Russia and China, this was around 1969, I believe, we're all just, that was all theater, and it wasn't real. Now, certainly nations do occasionally stage various actions or incidents, but Golitsyn was clearly fantasizing.
One of his accusations was that the Soviet Union active measures, one of their active measures in the U.S. was a sort of this moral corruption of the West.
Yeah, which is
kind of funny, because is he saying that's cultural Marxism? That's like the OSS and CIA are doing that.
Yeah, that's actually capitalism.
Yeah,
using cultural Marxism. Yeah, that has nothing to do with Soviet communism. I mean, not that. Lenin and people like that weren't devious, you know, they certainly had devious minds, or certainly, you know, people like Trotsky or whoever, and were looking to subvert the West. But no, it didn't work that way. Capitalism, as we have seen, produces unbelievable degradation and corruption, moral corruption. So I think the Soviets, old time Soviets, wouldn't know what to do if they saw where the West is now with
Howard Stalin react to a transgendered person?
yeah, that's the hilarious thing is that these protesters who they'll walk around with communist flags and the causes they're espousing would land them in the camps immediately. Mm-hmm. That's a one way ticket to Kolyma or Solovki or somewhere in the Arctic Circle. So.
Yeah, but yeah, when I read that, I was like, "What? That's kind of like what Hollywood's doing." And Herbert Marcuse and OSS.
Yes, I think, yeah, and a lot of defectors have kind of. There's another one, Bizmianov, who took that line that the Soviet Union had a grand strategy to corrupt the West and to introduce moral relativism and things like of that nature.
Yeah, the Soviets weren't promoting rock music or jazz music or heroin. It's the CIA.
Yes, that was the right. That was the CIA, and that was international capital. It wasn't the Soviets. That doesn't, you know,
Playboy Sports Illustrated, the swimsuit edition. That's not the Soviet. That's not Soviet
propaganda. Right. That's not the hand of the Kremlin. But at the same time, you do notice that these defectors tend to. People like Galitzin and Bizmianov, they kind of outlive their usefulness. And once they've provided hard operational information, names, dates, places, facts like those, they have to stay viable and make a living for themselves and be relevant. And so they start talking about these grand Soviet strategies to deceive the West and to introduce moral corruption and how eventually the West will be on its knees before communism. When in reality, you're just looking at it really didn't have much at all to do with communism. It was Western suicide. And if you look at it dialectically, it was capitalism that birthed communism. It was, And Bolshevism was introduced into Russia from the West. It wasn't a native phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me. Yeah. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember the old Second City TV comedy show.
I do not.
Well, it was like they're the nucleus for a lot of the performers on Saturday Night Live. It was out of Chicago. A lot of the people actually were Canadian, but it was a show that was on. Right after Saturday Night Live in the 80s, on 1 in the morning, uh-huh. Sunday morning, and just odd comedy. And they'd run these, one time, sometimes they'd devote an entire episode, it ran like an hour, hour and a half, to this one theme or idea. And one was a movie they did. It was I Was a Teenage Communist. It was a takeoff of I Was a Teenage Werewolf with Michael Landon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's this communist cell, these people that are, you know, these typical 50s teenagers, you know, good-natured, you know, boys interested in baseball, apple pie, and all that's America, and the this communist cell guy looks just like Lenin, by the way. The guy he invites him in and starts playing jazz music and talking about girls and smoking and things like that, and then the girl bites him on the neck. it was just this whole plan, this whole idea that somehow all this you know, the moral corruption of the West was being injected by communists,
right?
You know, when it actually was, you know, it was domestic. It was being created by our side, for lack of a better, you know, term. But
you bet.
But I thought it was funny. You watched that. It was like, you know, it wasn't the Soviets that were doing this stuff, man. It wasn't, you know, Playboy magazines.
I've also seen hilarious accusations that the Soviets were behind. The international drug trade or things of that nature that just really when you look into the history of CIA involvement with narcotics trafficking, you realize no, that wasn't the KGB. And it's not like, of course, the KGB weren't angels either, but they were not running and they're not running the international drug trade.
Shanghai, or Hong Kong, HSBC, the Jersey Island bankers, the City of London, and Wall Street.
Yeah, you bet.
Raking in the dough from the drug trade. It isn't Moscow. They might, I'm sure some drugs, but that's they're being pumped in there. I mean, that was a large part of the Afghan war was a pipeline for heroin going into the Soviet Union.
Right. No, that was a geopolitical weapon that was used to stabilize the country.
And that goes back to the British model, the Opium Wars. That's an old strategy.
Yes.
Create markets and you corrupt the country with drugs, weaken it. Well, Mark, listen, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Tim.
I'll let you go now. And we'll look forward for that new article. When is that going to be ready, you think?
I'd say within the next week or two. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Okay. And so look for that. That would be on which website would that be on?
Espionage History Archive. Yeah, on Rothschild and the revelation by the first chairman of the KGB that he was in fact a Soviet asset.
Very interesting. Of course, when we're talking about a Soviet asset, that at the meta level, the Soviets were a bankster asset.
right. And Rothschild, of course. Yeah, I mean, when you get into the stages of the later Cold War, you'll kind of see that, or rather, in the Cold War, that kind of that second half of the Soviet Union's existence, that Stalin, as bad as he was, didn't do the international banksters' bidding. People like Rockefeller or Bernard Baruch, and sort of incorporate his sphere of influence into a burgeoning world state. So he went off the script, and therefore was demonized. He was an evil man, but he was demonized for other reasons in the West. And
yeah, there's a reason why, like in 1941, Stalin's being portrayed as a hero in the movies, and then 10 years later he's a demon. That's
right. Look at the Afghan freedom fighters, and then they're tomorrow's terrorists. Yeah, it's that all over again. But so Russia as the enemy in the Cold War kind of came about from that refusal to go under a world state under, of course, American hegemony or supervision or whatever, however you'd want to put it.
Yeah, I think Kerry Bolton has a book about that. About
that's
Stalin.
That's right. Right. And
sort of unwitting hero against New World Order. it's hard to swallow that, but if you understand dialectics, you can see where that
It's really strange, but truth is stranger than fiction. So. Yeah.
Well, and like I said, in this world, it isn't a simple matter of good guys versus bad guys. It's not.
Nah. And that's exactly right. I think like Dostoevsky said, the battle between God and the devil is fought within the heart of every man. So that's kind of where we have to look.
That's the best way to end it, on a quote by Dostoevsky. Okay. Well, listen. I know out there it's your dinner time. So I'm gonna let you go. You've been very generous with your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I will, when I post this, I'll send you the link, and if you want to post it to Soul of East or something, I'll certainly welcome it. You're the mayor, so great.
Okay, great.
Good night. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Night.
Blue strains of no regrets. Cut the street of Cathedral Notre Dame. Meanwhile, back in San Francisco, tried hard to make this whole thing blend. And we set upon this dragon.
story block with you, my friend. And it's a long way to Buffalo. Long way to Belfast, send it to. And I'm hoping that Joyce don't blow the hoist. But this time, they've been up most than they can chew. And we gaze out on Saint Dominic's preview. Saint Dominic's preview. Saint Dominic's preview. All the orange crates are scattered. Got the Safeway supermarket in the rain. Everybody feels so determined not to feel anyone else's pain. No one maker, no commitments. Anybody but themselves. Close doorways, trying to get outside empty shells. And for every ever across the country corner, every hike when the railroad train will cry. All the chains and badges, flags and emblems, every strain on every brain. He's paid out for the wine. Yeah, 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 yeah. Got everything in the world you ever wanted, don't you? Right about now, your patient was smiling, chilling up. That's the way it all should happen. In a fairy tale state you're in. Have you got your pen? Notebook ready. Sign right here. Sign right here. Now we begin. And way over on a 52nd Street apartment. Socializing with a wide old view. Get to be hip and get wet with the jet set.
Soul Orchestra here.